Insurers warranties. Champaign Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Pretty Nails, Milo's Restaurant, and McCandless Photography, located next to the post office, still using a traditional film process to create contemporary portraits.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Did you know that sleep is the main occupation of children and adolescents? In their new book, Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep, Doctors Judy Owens and Jody Mendel state, by age two, the average baby has spent an impressive 9,500 hours, or a total of 13 months, in dreamland, in contrast to 8,000 hours for all other activities combined. Between the ages of 2 and 5, a child spends approximately equal amounts of time awake and asleep. And throughout adolescence, sleep accounts for about 40% of a child's day. That tells us a lot about the importance of sleep, doesn't it? But many children aren't getting the sleep they need, and that can have a big impact on their health and their development. On the program today, we'll talk about sleep and children and teenagers. Our guest is Jody Mendel. She is the co-author of Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep. Jody Mendel is the associate director of the Sleep Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She's also a professor of psychology at St. Joseph's University. And she is the author of Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers, and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep. Listeners, I invite your questions about kids and sleep for Jody Mendel. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep, the all-in-one resource for solving sleep problems in kids and teens, is out in paperback, published by Marlowe and Company. That's an imprint of Avalon Publishing. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Jody Mendel, how are you? Welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's great to be back. It's always good to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, kids need a lot of sleep, so two questions to start. Would you give us some sense of what's happening when they sleep and why it's so critical to development?
Well, amazingly, I can't answer your first question about what's happening when kids sleep or what's happening when adults sleep. You know, bizarrely enough, we don't really know why we sleep.
Huh.
I know, you would think that's an obvious. We know what happens if you don't get the sleep you need, but we don't really know why. When you're sleeping, though, just kind of to give you some what we call sleep 101, is that when, say, a child goes to sleep, they go through different stages of sleep, and there's non-REM sleep and there's REM sleep, and REM sleep stands for rapid eye movement. And if you ever watch your dog or your cat sleep, you see it. You see them twitching a little bit. You see their eyes darting back and forth. And if you watch your child or your partner or someone like that, you see that too. And it's REM sleep, and it's when we're dreaming. And then the other one is called non-REM. I guess I couldn't think of another name, so it's just not that kind of sleep. And in non-REM sleep, you have both the early stages of sleep as you're falling asleep, and in stage one is a very light sleep. And if I say to you, you were just sleeping and you deny it, you're in stage one. You don't really have an awareness that you're falling asleep. And then stages three and four, as it goes down, is very, very deep sleep, and it's when you're completely conked out. So especially in children who get a lot of deep sleep, that's the time when you can take your child out of the car and take them upstairs and change their clothes and put them to bed, and they never even stir. That's, you know, they're just kind of floppy. And, you know, people say, well, what's the most important kind of sleep? Well, they're both important. Both deep sleep and REM sleep both have their reasons. And it's like, what's better, you know, fruits or vegetables? They're both important. So you need both kinds of sleep. But that's going to happen throughout the night, and you cycle back around and around and around going through the different sleep stages.
Yeah. Now, everybody has these types of sleep, REM and non-REM sleep. But are there differences between the sleep of children and that of adults?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Newborns, so brand new, first few weeks, that we call it active sleep there. We don't really call it REM sleep. But I'll just use that terminology because it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
They spend half their time in REM sleep, which is really amazing, versus an adult spends about 20% of their time. And it drops off very quickly. By the age of 3, it looks like adult sleep of what that percentage is. So something is clearly really critical about REM sleep for that very, very early brain development. The other things, the differences between children's sleep and adult sleep is how much sleep they need. We know children and adolescents need a great deal more sleep than adults do, but adults need a lot, too. And most of our adults are not getting that in our society. There are other changes in terms of that sleep cycling. And in children, it's more like 60 minutes. In adults, it's more like 90 minutes. And that other thing is that deep sleep, that, you know, when you're conked out cold sleep, is really much more in children, and it really falls off after puberty. And most sort of older people don't get that kind of sleep.
Yeah.
So that way, maybe why it's not as refreshing in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I know if I don't get enough sleep, I'm groggy and I'm grumpy.
There you go. That's exactly a good definition of it. Yep.
But I wonder, you know, are there long-term consequences? If I am deprived of sleep, you know, night after night after night, what are the consequences for adults, and are there differences, again, between children and adults?
Well, so let me sort of say what happens if you don't get enough sleep. And let me sort of give in a bigger global picture, and then we can talk about more specifically these long-term things. So we know, which you nailed on the head, affects your mood, cranky, irritable. Especially with kids, we know it affects emotional regulation, which means how well can you regulate your mood. So if you don't get enough sleep, you're much more likely to get frustrated, much more likely to get angry, much more likely to burst out into tears.
Mm-hmm.
Someone tells you something a little wry, normally you can hold it together, and you burst out in tears, and you're totally embarrassed later. Another thing is that, especially with kids, you see it, but you see it with adults. You ever been in a situation where you couldn't stop laughing? Usually it's because you're tired.
Yeah.
You can't pull it together.
You get slap happy.
Yeah, you get slap happy, and it's because you're overtired. So that's mood. Second thing is it affects cognitive abilities, so thinking. So attention, memory, decision-making, problem-solving, all the things that we as adults really need to do during the day. But for kids, it's essential. They're in school, and that's what they do, right? Attention, concentration, memory, decision-making, problem-solving, all those things. Another area that it affects is performance. So we know that there's a relationship between how children do in school and their sleep. And there it's an association, but we know that typically kids who get more sleep have higher grades, and the other way around, kids with higher grades get more sleep. And adults who perform better get more sleep. Though there always is those few people out there who say,
yeah,
you know, I don't need that much sleep. Like, you know, there's some kind of celebrities who talk about they only get 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and I think they would probably do dramatically better if they got the sleep they need. But the other thing, which is also of concern, is health. And so looking at that short term, we know that accident rates are much higher. And there was a great study of preschoolers, 3-year-olds, who are more likely to break their arms and need stitches on the day after they didn't get enough night's sleep. Now, the bigger question is, what, how does it relate to other types of health, like cardiovascular health and immune functioning and obesity and diabetes? And that's where you're really starting to see that we're doing a lot of research in adults on this, and people are starting to say that there are long-term ramifications, that not getting enough sleep is associated with obesity and diabetes and cardiac disease. Now, does that mean that if your 4-year-old doesn't get enough sleep, are they going to have the same ramifications? And we don't know. We really don't. That research is just sort of cutting edge in adults. It's going to take a lot longer to move on to look at that in children, and you got to wait a while. And these are diseases that children don't typically have, so it's going to take a long time for us to figure that out. Now, if your 4-year-old, you know, has had bad sleep habits for the last 6 months, you know, I wouldn't be concerned about it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your child has more of a sleep disorder, like a breathing problem, then there's a little more concern there. But, you know, I have parents panic. Their 9-month-old doesn't sleep as well as their neighbors, and they're sure they're not going to Harvard. You know, that child's going to Harvard just as much as the next child. That parents don't need to be concerned that way.
Yeah. You mentioned Harvard.
Yeah, whatever, you know, right. Or Princeton or Stanford.
Or the University of Illinois.
Or the University of Illinois, right.
But this brings up the point about brain development. Children, from the get-go. Their brains are growing and changing, and that happens through adolescence. So are there impacts on how that individual's brain is developing? You know, is there an impact if they're not getting enough sleep?
You know, we don't know.
Really?
We really don't know. And those studies obviously can't be done in, you know, our kids, because you can't say to half the parents, okay, your kids, I want you for the next year is to give them only 6 hours of sleep, and then we're going to check their brains afterwards. You know, you can't do that. I'm sure they're starting to do that with animal models, you know, looking at, you know, baby pups, mice and rats and things like that. But we really don't know. You know, the evidence is that it is key. And, you know, you can think about things like after puberty, kids really have this all of a sudden this burst of needing more sleep and are sleepier. And that probably has to do with development. You know, it goes right along with puberty and other body changes. You know, why is it that newborns need so much REM sleep? Again, it's probably because there's brain development going on there, but we don't really know.
Yeah. So in adolescence, when we hear, give me a break, they really need it.
They really need it. Yeah, and they're really tired. They are one tired group of kids.
Yeah. I was waiting to get my hair cut last week, and there was a youngster. Listen to me.
Sorry, that just dated you. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a there was an adolescent guy waiting to get his hair cut, and he had just come from school, and he was sitting in the chair waiting to get his hair cut, and he was sound asleep.
Was he really?
Yeah.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to sleep when you're getting your hair cut.
Well, he wasn't getting his hair cut yet.
He was waiting.
Yeah,
he was waiting. But yeah, and teachers see this all the time. I mean, the amount of kids who are falling asleep in school is incredible, because they're, you know, and we could spend a lot of time talking about why there are teens in our society are not getting the sleep they need, but they're just not.
Yeah. So yeah. What are some of the things that are keeping our children from getting enough sleep?
Well, so let me sort of talk in a broad range, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the adolescent. So in a broad range, our society. You know, we're a 24/7 society now. That means that, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, you can do just about everything that you could do at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, you can order your plane tickets. You can call any catalog. You can often go to the bank, go to the grocery store, you know, go to fast food, open 24 hours. That also means that not only can you be busy, but there's workers there who also, so there's many more shift workers. So our society is really set up for not sleeping. But for our kids, there's some big things. We call them sleep stealers in our book, Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep. You know, electronics in the bedroom, the amount of televisions, computers, instant messaging, cell phones, just, you know, the buzz that's going on in our kids' bedrooms and keeping them awake is incredible. Caffeine, huge amount of caffeine intake, again, by both children and adolescents. So that's going to make it very, very hard for them to fall asleep and to sleep. Too many activities. We've become this overscheduled group. I mean, I know when we were kids, you know, that bad old age, you know, when I was a child, you know, kids were not doing activities after, you know, dinner time. There was nothing after 6 o'clock in the evening, and now it's getting scheduled at, you know, Scouts is at 8 o'clock at night. Kids are doing tons of different activities, so they have to do homework until late in the night. Now, when you look, think about our adolescents, one of the big things is just there aren't enough hours in the night for these kids to get the sleep they need. We know that teenagers need 9.25 hours of sleep. So that's a lot, 9.25 hours of sleep. They are being squeezed by two things, one their biology and one high school start times. So on the biology side, after puberty, teenagers can't fall asleep until about 2 hours later than they could before. Their internal clock literally shifts by about 2 hours, and we have scientific evidence supporting that. The other side is that high school start incredibly early. In our local high school just down the street here from where I work, they start at 7:35. I don't know what it is in your area. And some of these kids are getting up at, you know, having to get on transportation, whether it's a bus or whether it's public transportation if they live in the city. You know, they're getting on the bus at 6:30. So they're just, you know, if they can't fall asleep till 11 and they have to be on the bus at 6:30, which is on the bus means they have to get up earlier than that, you know, they're getting 6 hours of sleep, 7 hours of sleep.
And if they're in an extracurricular activity that meets before school.
Right, they're just doomed. Right, so the kids who are, you know, doing early morning skating or any of those things are really having a hard time.
Yeah.
It's amazing how well, you know, thinking about the Olympics coming up, it's amazing how well you look at these youngsters, these adolescents, and how well they do, because you know they're probably not getting the sleep they need. They have a lot of activities, and on top of that, this, you know, incredible competitive sports.
Yeah. There has been some discussion of changing the school day. What do you think?
It's a phenomenal idea. I mean, it's in our kids' best interest. So if you want to put, number one, what's most important for the kids, moving those high school start times are key. Now, given that I said that, I understand and I'm sympathetic, it's very hard on school districts to do it. So there's a number of factors that go into it. The biggest thing is busing, is that, you know, they've got these three tiers, the elementary school kids, the middle school kids, and the high school kids, and they don't, you know, you have to bus one group at a time, and so the high school kids typically go first. Other things that, you know, part of it's tradition. That's what time it's always started, and that's what everyone's schedules are like. Sports is a huge stumbling block, though. In Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Edina, Minnesota, which were the very first school districts to change their high school start times, they came up with the obvious but brilliant solution of making gym the last event, the last part of the school day for their athletes. So they would go do their sport and count it as gym at the exact same time, because all the other teams are out at, you know, they can play at 2:30 and the high schools have shifted their time. They can't play at 2:30. Those high schools who have made the shift are very, very happy about it. Now, this has been a long discussion. You know, it's been going on for 7 or 8 years. There's a lot of school districts I just was contacted by, asking my thoughts on it. In Florida, they're back to it. They had taken it off the table 2 years ago, and they're back to it, and they're piloting it at one or two high schools. So, I mean, you know, it's going to take a while for the change to happen, but it's really key for our kids.
Yeah.
I mean, their number one job is to learn. And if they're asleep at their desk, they can't be learning.
Right. And also as they get older, well, even the young ones, if they're not getting enough sleep, well, they might do something, you know, that would be something that they shouldn't be doing, whether it's crossing the street and not paying attention or whether it's getting behind the wheel of a car.
Right. And, you know, we just published a study looking at risk-taking in adolescents and saw that those kids who don't get as much sleep are more likely to take risks. Now, again, those kids kind of may go together, you know, kids who are more likely to engage in risk-taking behavior may also be the kids who just don't go to bed till 1. But there's no question that if you can't think straight, you're going to make some dumb decisions.
Yeah. Getting back to sleep problems that kids have, I was surprised to learn that they're basically the kind of sleep problems that adults have.
Yeah, it's not that much different. I mean, it is and it isn't. You know, the thing is that probably the presentation or the sleep problem sounds the same, but underlying it may be different. So, for example, sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is a breathing problem. We sort of know it traditionally as being a middle-aged, overweight male disorder. You know, you think about sort of the body types of like a John Candy or John Belushi. That's sort of the body type of an adult with sleep apnea, but women have it too, and we're starting to understand that lots of kids have it, but they have it for a very different reason. Now, sleep apnea is a breathing problem. It's when you're sleeping, you stop breathing. Now, you don't stop breathing forever. You just stop breathing for a moment or two, but it really disrupts your sleep and isn't good for you. In kids, it's typically because they have large tonsils and adenoids. So you get lots of 3 to 5-year-olds, 3 to 6-year-olds especially, who have these little tiny airways because they're little tiny people and these very large tonsils and adenoids, which are at their biggest size right at that age, and it's just a really bad combination. So when they fall asleep and their muscles relax, those tonsils or adenoids close the airway and they can't breathe. So for an adult, it's for a very different reason, but you're right, it looks on the surface like the same disorder.
Yeah.
Insomnia, you know, not being able to fall asleep, very different in children than in adults. Kids have, you know, we always think of insomnia as like, insomnia to us is really a symptom. It's like pain. Why does it hurt? There's probably 20 different reasons for why it hurts.
Yeah.
There's 20 different reasons for why you can't sleep. And for kids, we see it for a lot of reasons. Some of it's just bad habits. Some of it is too much caffeine. Some of it is that they have an anxiety disorder and it makes it hard for them to fall asleep. Some of it is, especially in our teenagers, is that their internal clock, that body clock, is really shifted. So maybe they would prefer and their body wants to sleep from 3 in the morning till noon. So when they go to bed at 11, they're just lying there for 4 hours. So they report it as insomnia, but it's really not. Because if I put them to bed at 3 in the morning, they would conk out right away.
Yeah. Now, how do you know if you have a child with a sleep problem or if it's, you know, it's not something to be worried about?
You know, if it's affecting them or affecting their schoolwork or affecting their family relations, then it's a sleep problem. You know, and what do you do first? The first thing you do is really develop good sleep habits, is make sure that the sleep habits are in place. And if there's still a problem, that's when you need to go talk to your child's doctor.
Yeah. Tell us about the Bears questionnaire that you include in the book.
The Bears Questionnaire was developed by my co-author, Dr. Judy Owens, and what it does is it's an acronym. It really was developed for pediatricians to help them sort of do a really quick screening of whether or not a child has a sleep problem or doesn't have a sleep problem. So B stands for bedtime. So does your child have a problem falling asleep? Do they have any difficulty going to bed? Do they resist going to bed? So that's B in the Bears. E stands for excessive daytime sleepiness. Is your child hard to wake up in the morning? Are they falling asleep in school? Are they falling asleep while waiting for their hair to be cut, right? Mm-hmm. That's E. A is for awakenings during the night. So do they wake up during the night? Do they have any hard time falling back to sleep? Now, if you have a 3-year-old, you're going to know it. If you have a 15-year-old, you may have to ask them. They may not let you know that. R is the regularity and the amount of sleep. So are they going to bed at the same time every night? Are they getting the hours they need, like 9 1/4 in a teenager? And S is for snoring. So if your child has any breathing problems, seems to be snoring, gasping for breaths, any difficulty breathing. So it's B-E-A-R-S. But it's a really nice way to sort of just encapsulate most of the sleep problems fall within those or that realm.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today on the program we're talking about sleep and children. Jody Mindell is our guest this afternoon. She is the co-author of Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep, the all-in-one resource for solving sleep problems in kids and teens. She is the associate director of the Sleep Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She's also a professor of psychology at St. Joseph's University. And she's the author of a previous book about sleep and kids, Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers, and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. If you have questions about children and sleep, give us a call and talk with our guest. She can help. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. So if we've got a problem, what do we do about it?
You know, first of all, you have to try, you know, I think everyone's job, whoever that everyone be, parents or doctors, whoever, need to figure out, you know, what is the problem and what's the cause behind it. And the what is the problem is usually a little more obvious. You know, can't get him up for school, he's waking during the night, he can't sleep at night. The cause is often a little bit more of sleuthing, of really trying to sort out why is it, you know, because usually sleep problems come as one of two things. You either can't sleep or you're sleepy during the day. Those are usually the two kind of main complaints that happen. There's a lot of reasons for each of those. You know, why can't you fall asleep? Maybe you're anxious. Maybe your internal clock has shifted. Maybe it's your, you know, the family dynamic is it's 2 hours of fighting to get the child to go to bed and they finally crash at 11 o'clock. So there's lots of reasons for that. Why are you sleepy during the day? To be honest, the number one cause of why a child's sleepy during the day is they're not getting enough hours of sleep at night. It's just an obvious, and a lot of parents kind of look at this cross-eyed like, you mean I came all the way in for you me to tell you to move his bedtime earlier? Yeah, and a lot of times that works. Other reasons why kids are sleepy during the day is like breathing problems during sleep, or they're not getting the quality sleep they need. For some reason, their sleep's getting disrupted. And, you know, very young children, maybe it's a medical problem like reflux. We see lots of medically complex children in our clinic because we work in a children's hospital. And a lot of these kids, as you can imagine, they're in pain or they're on medications and things like that that are disrupting their sleep.
Yeah. Back to the child who you recommend, you know, well, let's try and get him to bed a little earlier. Well, that's the obvious answer, but it to get that accomplished can be pretty tricky.
Easy.
So where do you start?
Well, you know, it depends upon the age. With a 3-year-old, it's a lot easier. They can't tell time. You just move bedtime earlier, whatever. With a teenager, you know, a lot of it is negotiation. And at least, you know, if I'm in a clinic setting, which is much easier, you know, I and the child can make a deal. If you cut the parents out of it a little bit, the parents look at you kind of like, what are you doing? But, you know, I try to get the kids to take charge of it, take control of it, and make the decision themselves. Because or else, so then you take out that whole resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, mom tells me to go to bed, so I'm not. And they make a deal with me. And what we usually do is start small. And I say to them, you know, I want you to go to bed earlier only for the next week. That's all I want is 1 week of you going to bed earlier. And it's amazing when they come back. They'll usually say to you, I can really tell the difference. So if you can just buy that and give them a glimpse, then you're going to be much more successful in making it as a long-term commitment. You know, with other kids, getting to bed earlier really conflicts with schedules. And so you really have to spend a lot of time with the family figuring out what's going to go. And, you know, what's going to go may be you can't do three sports or you can't even do that one sport, that you got to find out somewhere, you know, coming up with a balance.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, it all sounds great in theory, and it's great when I make these recommendations, but the reality of it is very hard. I mean, my daughter's 8, and she is a night owl, and she's a true night owl. Her body clock, she can just so easily stay awake till 10 or 10:30 or 11 and sleep in the morning till 10, which is unusual for an 8-year-old to be able to do that, which I worry when she's a teenager. But, you know, what we do very hard is on weekends we don't let her sleep in. You know, you can't let her go past 8:30 or 9 or she shifts.
Yeah.
And so you feel bad because you're thinking she must need the sleep. She's going to be really tired. But if we do it, it just really, you know, she goes awry on Sunday night. She can't fall asleep and early enough. And on Monday morning, she's too tired. You know, she's tired for school.
Yeah. Well, that gets at the issue of routine.
Exactly. And it really keeping her body clock, for my daughter, keeping her body clock where it's the same bedtime and the same wake time is key for her. And she knows it. I mean, she really knows that if she doesn't get to bed, if she doesn't get up awake early enough, that she won't be able to fall asleep at bedtime.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that what time you wake up in the morning really is what sets your clock for the day and really what sets whether or not you're going to be able to fall asleep at the time you want.
Yeah. My nephew used to say when he was a little tyke, you know, I have to go to bed now, Aunt Celeste, because I have to get up quick.
That's great.
And I was like, gosh, that's brilliant, you know?
It is brilliant, yeah.
Mom and Dad did I don't know what they said, but it sunk in.
They drilled it in their heads. Yeah, yeah. You know, and for her, she's going to be fighting her biology. I mean, I can just see my husband's the same way. I could see he fights his biology. And, you know, he really tries to not sleep in too much on weekends because just like a teenager, it would just throw him.
Yeah. One of the fun things that you and your co-author do in Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep is talk a little bit about sleep personalities. And, you know, it sounds like you've got Garfield Jr., there in your house. But, you know, then there's the Energizer Bunny. And what else?
So there's the Energizer Bunny. The Energizer Bunny is a kid who just can keep going and going and going and going.
Yeah.
And they may be a couple of things. One is they may be a short sleeper. Pretty unlikely. There's not that many short sleepers out there. A lot of them are overtired. They get wound up, they get past their sort of natural fall asleep time, and you get a second wind, and so you really have a hard time. Another personality we call the princess and the pea, or the prince and the pea, is a child who's just an incredibly sensitive sleeper. You know, one thing is different, and they just can't sleep. I was just talking to a mom this morning, and their family had just taken a trip to Disney World, and the 3-year-old just couldn't sleep down there. All he wanted to do was be home with his trains, and the minute they got home, he slept great again. So there's some people who are just sort of sensitive to what's happening and what's going on. My daughter's really the rock star, which is she's a night owl. She's a complete, you know, just that's the time of day.
Okay.
And, you know, and then there's the Garfield Jr., and the Garfield Jr. is a kid who just loves to sleep, who sounds a bit like your nephew. They're really good at managing their sleep, and my daughter is. She's good at managing it, but, you know, she's not the kid who's at 8 o'clock is saying, I need to go to bed. And, you know, I see that with this big group of 8-year-olds, my daughter's friends. You know, at 8 o'clock at night, there's a bunch of them that are saying, okay, I'm ready to go to bed, and there's a bunch of them saying, like, looking at you like, I could just keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're really different, and you really have to sort that out. And as a parent, when you have more than one kid, you know, it's hard to figure out, and especially parents of twins, when they have different personalities, it makes it hard.
Wow.
You've got to negotiate that.
Yeah. Outside of the clock, what else do we want to have as part of the routine? We want to have a go-to-sleep time and a wake-up time pretty constant.
Right. Another thing is a bedtime routine, which is that even with your 8-year-old and your 14-year-old and your 17-year-old is really having them, with you probably involved or not involved, depending on your child's age, a real 20 to 30-minute wind-down time. You know, some of our kids are coming in, especially our teenagers, you know, they come home, they do their homework, and then they're expected to turn out the light and fall asleep. And it's just not possible, is that you really need to build in that they do, you know, whether it's doing some quiet reading or listening to some music or talking to you about their day, of really building in, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of that they do the same thing every night and you know, and keep doing that. Some other sleep tips. You know, I don't think I could be successful in getting all the electronics out of the bedroom, but if I could get every parent to throw that television out of the bedroom window, mm-hmm. I'd be thrilled. I think televisions in Belgium are really causing problems for our kids' sleep, and and if you can get rid of it, it's a really good thing. Cutting out the caffeine is to really look at what is your child drinking every day, how much caffeine are they taking in, and what time is that happening. And we put in Take Charge. We put in a whole list of all the different things that kids could possibly have and how much caffeine they have in them. And it's important for parents to review that, because sometimes things that have caffeine that parents aren't always sure about. For example, all the iced teas, that's sort of the big drink right now, is all the kids are drinking iced tea, especially in the summer, and there's a lot of caffeine in some of them. Some of the, even the sodas, some of the orange sodas have caffeine and some of the orange sodas do not. So also looking at the labels, an obvious one, and I hate to mention brands, but I will, unfortunately. Sunkist Orange Soda has caffeine, and Diet Sunkist Orange Soda does not. Why? I have no idea. But again, unless you look at the labels, you're not going to know that as a parent, to try to figure out how much they're having. So if they're drinking, orange soda at 9 o'clock at night, they're just getting a, rev up. They're not going to be able to fall asleep. Morning light, which is an interesting tip, is to, in the morning, not only wake up at the same time, but get what we call a dose of morning light. Put the shades up. Get out in a sunny spot, keep the sunglasses off for the ride to school, is going to really help set your clock and, again, make it so that you can be sleepy in the evening.
Hmm. What about the bedroom itself, other than, getting in there when the first wake-up call goes out and opening the shades and opening the curtains?
Yeah, so you want it cool, you want it dark, and you want it comfortable. So cool, you want it, the best sleeping temperature is around 65 to 68 degrees. Some people like it cooler than that. Hotter than that's going to definitely disrupt your sleep. And with the prices of oil and gas, it's a good thing anyway to be turning down your thermostat. But sleeping in a cooler bedroom is really going to make a difference. Dark. So, again, any light to the eyes is going to wake you back up. So making sure that, they're not sleeping with the overhead lights on. And, people do that. They fall asleep while reading or whatever, and the lights are on, as you really don't want that. So maybe put the light on a timer or, put it on a dimmer or something to get those lights off. And then comfortable. You want a mattress that's comfortable, and you want bedding that's comfortable, and you want it to be kind of a little cocoon haven of a place that you really want to go and feels relaxing and comfortable. And that's as true for our kids as it is for adults. A lot of kids sleep with 3,500 stuffed animals in their bed. And, that's okay, but you want to make sure that there's room for your child, is that they do have a space in there for them to sleep, or if they want, one of their pets sleeps with them, to make sure it's not disrupting their sleep, that that's a good thing. And some kids sleep much better with their pet in the bed with them. Again, my daughter, who's 8, has her cat sleeps on her feet. And so now when she goes away, it's interesting, it's become such a habit that she usually brings a larger stuffed animal and puts it on her feet so it feels like it. Which is interesting that you don't think about that. It's become a habit for her to feel this kind of weight on her feet.
Yeah. We've had a caller who called in who had to jump off the phone right away, but wanted you to elaborate on diet a little bit in terms of having a little something before you go to bed.
Yeah, I get asked that a lot about what's the impact of food on sleep. So a few do's and don'ts, but there aren't that many. Obviously, caffeine, that's a pretty obvious one. You don't want to eat a really heavy meal right before bedtime, because your body's going to be digesting it and so working pretty hard while you're trying to sleep, and it won't work that well. You also want to really avoid spicy foods or anything that upsets your kid's stomachs right before you go to bed. On the other side of it, a good do is having a light snack before bedtime can be a very positive thing, because then you won't get hungry either at bedtime or in the middle of the night. It will carry you over till the next morning. So a light snack is good, whether it's, the traditional is milk and cookies. People say, well, then there's chocolate chip cookies. I mean, the amount of chocolate in a chocolate chip cookies and the amount of caffeine is not going to have a negative impact at all. Milk chocolate has very little caffeine in it. But anything, whether it's a yogurt at bedtime or fruit at bedtime, any of those things are going to be really good.
A little cereal, maybe?
Yeah, cereal would be great. Cereal, banana or something like that is a perfect bedtime snack.
Yeah. Now, I suppose you do want to watch the sugar.
Surprisingly, sugar has very little impact on
really?
Sleep. I mean, it's not good for you otherwise, but it doesn't really affect sleep. No, so, I mean, I don't think it's great to have a candy at bedtime, for many reasons, but it shouldn't impact on your sleep that much.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if you have a little snack Before bedtime, that can be part of the routine. And I suppose to have that snack, you could be away from the television. And then we make the move to the bathroom where we brush our teeth and so on and so forth.
Exactly. You know, even while your child can be eating a snack while you're reading stories to them, if it's, you know, a younger child, can be a really nice kind of way to get two things, you know, do two things at once. And then you're right, move on to the bathroom, brush the teeth, you know, and, you know, pajamas can be on or off earlier. You know, a lot of people do, and I want to go back to talking about this bedtime routine. A lot of people are a little bit confused about what does a bedtime routine mean. And a bedtime routine is just that you do the exact same three or four things in the same order every night. So for a typical kid, it may be taking a bath or a shower, pajamas, reading stories, and then saying goodnight. And if you do it in the same order, it's one, very, very reassuring. Two, it's kind of a wind-down time. It's a real nice transition from typically a very busy day to falling asleep. And, it, you know, obviously if, you know, grandpa's there watching your child for the night, you know, then he may do it in a slightly different order. But if it's there most nights, you're going to be in really good shape.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. Everybody's a little sleepy here today. If you've got a question about children and sleep, this is an opportunity to talk with a sleep expert, Jody Mendel, our guest this afternoon. She's co-author of Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name's Celeste Quinn. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455.
One thing I wanted to talk about a little bit, because it was so much in the news recently and lots of parents had questions about it, is the issue of medication and sleep.
Uh-huh.
Which is, should I give my child a medication to help them fall asleep? And secondly, which is that there was all this in the news that the amount of the number of kids who were getting medication to fall asleep was increasing dramatically. And there was this big news report that came out in the fall, and it keeps coming back up. So let me answer one and then the other. First of all, that data, both Dr. Owens and myself spent a lot of time trying to look at that data to sort that out. There was a big Medco study. Medco keeps track of prescriptions. And what they said was that, I don't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but that basically that sleep prescriptions had doubled since 2000, from 2000 to 2004. But if you look at the numbers, what you saw was that there were about 500 prescriptions out of about 350,000 children in 2000 and about little less than 1,000 prescriptions out of, again, about 350,000 children in 2004. And so it ends up being misleading. The number of kids looks like it doubles. However, if you look at percentages, you know, it went from some teeny tiny percent to some slightly larger teeny tiny percent. It's like if you go from one kid to two kids, you talk about it doubled, even though you have maybe 5,000 kids. So it really hasn't gone up that much. And most of it was older adolescents, it seemed. This study was looking at 13 to 21-year-olds, so most of them were adolescents and teens. So there's a little bit less of concern about that. There probably is a little bit more medication use because with the newer sleep medications that are out, people are becoming more and more comfortable using it with adults. They're probably using it now with more of the older adolescents.
Hmm. What about medications that kids might be on for various conditions, do they affect sleep?
Yeah, there's no question about it, especially some of the medications for ADHD, some of the stimulants, but it can go both ways. Some kids with stimulants, the medication wears off, and they really get a second wind. So they get more active because the medication wore off. And sometimes we often give another medication right near bedtime to calm them down, to get them to lie down enough, you know, to get calm enough to lie down and fall asleep. So sometimes it helps to give the medication. Other times that medication really interferes with sleep. Some of the asthma medications can really make it so you can't sleep. So you may want to, if your child's on an asthma medication having sleep problems, talk to your doctor about which ones are on and whether or not you want to change them or move it to a different time of the day. Sometimes just moving it can make a difference. So there's no question that that medications themselves can affect sleep. And then the other question is about, you know, should I give my child a medication? And our answer always is it shouldn't be your first, second, third, or probably even your fourth choice. That it really should be down the line as whether to do it. And for a lot of reasons. One is there are no FDA-approved medications for children related to sleep. So they've never been studied, and we don't know what the impact of some of these medications. And so it's a little worrisome about whether to give those kind of medications. Secondly, medications are often not the solution. Our most problematic kids in our clinic are the ones who we do put on a medication, because you go this balance between it's not a high enough dose for it to work, and then it's too high a dose, and in the morning they're still groggy. So you're playing a lot with trying to sort it out. The other thing is some of these medications are going to interact with other things your child's taking. So if you give them, you know, some of the medications out there on the counter say something like whatever, PM, you see all those all the time. That's just Benadryl. So if you're giving your child Benadryl for something else, you're now double dosing them. You have to be really careful about realizing what you're giving your child. And then some sleep disorders, that medication is going to make it worse, like a breathing problem.
Yeah.
So you want to be really careful. Now, on the other side, and people always say, well, you always sound like you're so against medications, is that I am involved in some of the pharmaceutical companies in trying to develop those clinical trials to see what is it that is effective for kids and safe for kids. And the reason why I believe it's important for us to have that is that as a sleep doctor, I need it in my arsenal. You know, for these severely developmentally disabled kids or for these kids who are neurologically impaired, you really, some of them have terrific problems sleeping that you really do want a medication to help them out. But in a typically developing child, we rarely use medication at all.
Yeah. Talk with us about how we can handle the issue of, you know, there's a monster in the closet, there's a monster under my bed. Whether they're saying it's a monster or they're just worried about something, you know, their stomach hurts before they go to school, that kind of thing. That, you know, so it's hard to get to sleep, and then they don't want to get up.
Yeah, you know, well, the monsters in the closet and under the bed and all that, nighttime fears are, one, parents need to realize they're normal. You know, they 3 to 6 year olds, that's what they do. As their imagination develops, not only do they start to imagine really cool, fun things so they can, you know, act out entire scenes and they can make their dolls have these whole events and stuff, is that at the same time their imagination develops in sort of negative ways, which is then they start to imagine that there's all these bad things that are going to come and get them. And it's interesting about children's fears is that when they're little, they're not afraid of what they need to be afraid of. You know, they'll walk out in the middle of the street, they'll go with a stranger, you know, all the things we worry about. They have no sense of that, but they're afraid of these unrealistic fears. And so, you know, with a lot of kids, you know, you can say to them, don't worry, there's no monster in my closet. They're never going to buy it. They just won't. So we often sort of use their imagination to fight those imaginary fears. So we do a lot of things like monster spray. A lot of take a you know, a plastic bottle and you fill it with water and you label it, you know, monster spray, boogeyman spray, whatever your kid calls it, and you spray the room. And a lot of kids just find that great. We do a lot of dream catchers, which are from the American Indian tradition, which is goes hangs over the bed and catches the bad dreams so kids don't get scared to go to bed at night and fall asleep if they're having nightmares. So if you put it in the context of sort of this is normal, now let me teach my child coping skills, it's a lot easier way to deal with it.
What about sleepwalking and sleep terrors? Normal?
Totally normal. Very common. Sleepwalking, about half of all kids do it. Sleep terrors, which are the exact same thing but just much more dramatic, occur only in about 3 to 5% of children. But they almost always occur in the first hour or two after they go to sleep. Not awake. They're completely asleep and totally normal. Now, I always say that the easiest way to differentiate between a night terror and a nightmare is who's more upset the next morning. The parents are more upset, it was absolutely a night terror. And if the kids are more upset, it's a nightmare.
Interesting. One more question before we have to wrap up this afternoon, and that is the issue of the sleepover.
The wakeover, as I call it. You know,
nobody gets any sleepover.
No one gets any sleep on sleepovers. So how do you manage it? Well, a couple of things. One is I think you need to limit them. You need to know your kid and you need to limit them. So maybe only one per weekend or one every other weekend or one per month. Depends on your child. Another thing is to also, you know, if your child especially is sleeping over at someone else's house, is to really talk to that parent about what you think your child's sleep needs are and to, you know, set some limits. And if you can get all your friend, you know, child's friends' parents to all agree that, you know, lights out have to be out by, say, 10:30, whatever it's going to be, or lights out are at 10 and quiet after 10:30, if you can get everyone to agree on it and follow through, it's going to be a much more positive experience for our kids.
Yeah. And by making some of these changes, we talked a little earlier about progress, and you want to get the kids involved. And I think you said in 1 week's time, you'll notice a difference. So
you will. Progress, it only takes a week.
Okay, so progress comes along pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you know, this is something where parents can make a change and kids can feel the difference so quickly.
And probably it'd probably be a good idea for us to model
all
this stuff.
Adults maybe, really need their 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah, and maybe we should not have the television in our room either.
Yeah, you got to model. You know, that's the other thing is parents need to model good sleep habits.
Yeah.
So they need to do the same things.
Dr. Mendel, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. Jody Mendel and Judy Owens are the authors of Take Charge of Your Child's Sleep, the all-in-one resource for solving sleep problems in kids and teens. The book is published by Marlowe and Company, an imprint of Avalon Publishing. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason. And we're going to try that one more time here this afternoon. Let's go now to the Ag office. Todd, are you there? No. Okay. Maybe what I should do is why don't I go ahead and start to give you folks the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange. The settlement prices are in from the Mercantile Exchange, and now I'm getting the high sign that we have the Ag office. Todd, are you there? No, we don't. Okay, let's go back to my other plan here. The Mercantile Exchange. If I can bring up the numbers here today.
Still not got me.
Oh, there we go. I have no idea what we've got. We've got a real problem here this afternoon. Let's sort that out. Henry, maybe you would go ahead and leave the studio and let me know what's what. Nope, here we go. Todd is joining me in the studio this afternoon.
Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. What? Had a good trip over from Mumford Hall, which is where my office is, about a mile south. I was here early waiting for you with bated breath, getting ready to do the Kansas City Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange.
I don't know. We had some kind of gremlin in the system.
Oh, that's all right. We have all kinds of gremlins in the ag system a lot of the time. In fact, one of those showing its head a little bit earlier today in Canada, where a BSE-positive 6-year-old cow was identified. Didn't have a lot of an impact in the marketplace at Chicago on the Mercantile Exchange. I know you give those numbers just a bit later, and we'll talk a little bit more about them on the closing mark report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon from the Kansas City Board of Trade. We'll start with the grains now. March wheat, 389 on the high, the low at 379 and a half. A settlement price there at $3.80. Since they were down 4. July contract at 385 and a half, high, low at 378. And a settlement at $3.79. They were off 2.5 cents for the day from the Chicago Board of Trade soft red winter wheat pit. The nearby March contract at 331 high, low at 324 and a half. Settlement price at 326. They were off a half. The May futures down a quarter. 341 and a half, the high, the low at 335 and three quarters. Settlement price at 337, down a quarter. July contract at 351 and a half, high, low at 345. Settled at 346 and a half. They were down a quarter. And the September's 359, the high, the low at 55, settlement price at 56.5, unchanged for the day. December wheat at the Board of Trade, 72.5, the high, the low at 67.5, settlement price $3.69. They were down a quarter cent a bushel. From the corn pit nearby March contract, 208.5, the high, the low at 05.5, settlement price at 208.25, up 3.25. May futures 218.5, the high, the low at 15.25, settlement price at 218.25, up 3.25, and July contract 227.5, the high, the low at 224.25, settlement price at $2.27.25, up 3.5 cents. September futures 235.5, the high, the low at 233.25. Settled at 235.5. They were up 3.25. December contract 246.25. The high, the low at 43.5. A settlement price at $2.46, up 3.5 cents. In the March futures, 253.25. The high, low at 250.25. Settlement price at 253, up 3.5 cents. March futures now from the oat pit in Chicago, 192. The high, the low at 189. Settlement price there at 189.75. They were down a penny in the May futures, down 1.25 today, 182.75 for the May oats. Soy complex bean futures March contract $576.5 the high, low at 570. Settlement price at 574.5, and they were up 6.5 for the day. May contract a 587 high, low at 580.75. Settlement price at $5.85, up 7.25. July futures in the bean pit, 597, the high, the low at 590.75, settlement price at 595.25, up 7.75 in the August contract, 599.5, the high, low at 594, settlement price at 597. They were up 7 for the day. September soybeans, $5.98 the high, the low at $5.96. Settlement price at $5.96, up 4.5 cents. In November futures, $6.07 the high, the low there at $6.01. Settlement price at $6.04 3/4, up 7 1/4. January soybeans, $6.11 1/4 the high, the low at $6.06 1/2. Settled at $6.10 1/2, up 7.5 cents for the day. Bean meal futures down. March contract, $182.10 the high. Low at $179.50. Settlement price there at $180.50. They were up $1.10. And the May meal settled at $182.40. They were up $1.50 a ton. March bean oil, $21.69 the high. The low at $21.40. Settlement price at $21.52. They were up $0.24 for the day. And the May bean oil at $21.85. They were up $0.22. Celeste, during the closing market report, of course, we'll take all the happenings up in the Chicago Board of Trade and those that have been happening at the Mercantile Exchange. Lots to say about what's been happening in the beef industry. On Friday of last week, Japan said, hey, we got a shipment from the U.S. and it had a spinal cord in it. Nope, we're not taking any more. That was BSE-related, and we've got a brand new BSE case in Canada out of an Alberta dairy cow. That one, of course, none of those actually got into the meat and consumed by humans at this point. And BSE is one of those interesting things that's used, in my opinion on this one, more as a trade issue than really a health issue. So we'll talk more about that during the closing market report. How did the numbers settle from the Mercantile Exchange?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because the feeder cattle finished higher today, while live cattle finished lower.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Okay, let's look at the livestock contracts now. January feeder cattle, 113.10 the high, 112.80 the low. The settlement, 113.05, that up 45. March, 112.60 the high, 111.55 the low. The settlement, 111.77 1/2, that up 30. April, 113 even the high, 112.15 the low, 112.42 1/2 the settlement, that up 30. February live cattle, 96.45 the high, 95.50 the low, 95.57 1/2 the settlement, that down 20. April, 94.70 the high, 93.80 the low, 93.95 the settlement, that down 17 1/2. February lean hogs, 59.35 the high, 58.30 the low, 59.10 the settlement, that down 15. April, 64.10 the high, 62.95 the low, 63.77 1/2 the settlement, that down 12 1/2. May, 67.65 the high, 66.50 the low, 67.12 1/2 the settlement, that down 30. June lean hogs, 70.25 the high, 69.05 the low, 70 even the settlement, that down 32 1/2. And February bellies, 81.20 the high, 78.55 the low, 80.55 the settlement, that down 72 1/2. The Dow is up 16 points, the NASDAQ off 2, the S&P 500 2 higher.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois.